Eve, I've got to admit, your article challenges, well, both my opinion of the Green Party of Canada and the Green Party itself and their apparent abandonment of its constitutional mandated pacifism in favor of a more war in Ukraine policy. Eve, is this the Green Party of Canada's progressive shark jumping moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's an interesting question in terms of, I think there have been other moments, as we've seen on the Palestine question at different moments where the Elizabeth May has worked against the membership. But I'd say that what we are seeing with regards to the NATO proxy war may be qualitatively different in that there is a willingness to go against the pacifist constitution of the party. There is in supporting, and I should say, in supporting more than $2 billion in Canadian weapons that have been donated to fight Russia, there's, obviously no criticism of any sort of substance of Canadian policy, which has been a very aggressive policy. So yeah, I mean, the Green Party in Canada is, following the trajectory of, Western European. Obviously, the Green Party in Germany, the foreign minister is from the Green Party, and she is a serious hawk, even within German politics on the question of Ukraine. And it's pretty remarkable to see that there is just no space in the House of Commons for any politician to question the underlying policies of the Canadian government. And these policies are not like I get I agree and I get that what Russia's doing is violent and aggressive. I obviously consider it a violation of international law, but there's a whole context that Canada is right at the center of in terms of provoking this war, in terms of overthrowing an elected government in Ukraine, 9 years ago that led to a low-level war in the east. There's all this context that Canada's right pushing NATO expansion, of course, and you're not even allowed to mention any of that in these discussions, and that includes from the Green Party of Canada.
What has changed? Is the
No.
idea of what is green changed, or what is progressive? Is there even such a thing anymore, or is war now seen as a progressive means of accomplishing one's aims?
Well, I think there's some of all of that, but I think it is important to note that when Elizabeth May made a critical comment, I think this is about 3 4 months ago now, start of the year, critical comment about Canadian policy vis-a-vis NATO, vis-a-vis Russia, should I say. She got rapped over the knuckles by the Ukrainian Canadian Congress, and she then did this whole little bit where when the head of the European Union, Vertelein, spoke in Parliament, she actually sat next to, she invited the head of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress to sit next to her and then tweeted out about it. And it was really like this sort of, I made this statement, it got pushed back from the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. I'm trying to make up by showing how I'm a big supporter of the NATO proxy war. So there may not be as much of a, arms industry base that maybe helps explain Green Party policy, though I do actually think that this sort of Elizabeth May has shown some interesting positions on naval questions, and I think that's partly to do with where she has run. She ran out in the Maritimes, and then obviously she's on Vancouver Island, and I think the Navy has greater power, of course, in those two places than they would elsewhere in the country. So I think there is also a little bit of a militarist base to some of the positions she's taken, historically. But yeah, I mean, this somebody on Twitter I just saw was attacking Dimitri Lascaris as a fake peace activist, and then I just today, and I jokingly said the real peace activist is Joe Biden. He's been promoting the defensive NATO alliance, and he has secured he sent $100 billion in weapons to end this war. And the person responded by saying, recognizing that I was joking, but saying, yes, that's right. So, I mean, this is somebody who would call themselves progressive. So they really are. There is a real ethos out there that the progressive thing is to rally behind NATO, because NATO is this benevolent force that's trying to protect Eastern Europe from the Russia boogeyman, the Russia bear, the Russia militarist. And so, the arms industry is, the fact that Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Canadian CAE and Canadian companies are doing well by the massive arms shipments. That's just a good thing. So yeah, I think that at an intellectual level, I don't think I've seen this level of war hysteria. I mean, it's remarkable. We're not even actually at war, and Canada's not actually at war. I mean, I think we are, in fact, but technically we're not. And this just sort of over the top. I mean, during Afghanistan war, I mean, there was tons of propaganda coming out from the Canadian military. Don't get me wrong. They spent incredible resources, and the media went along with it and whatever. But there was some room for dissent. There were actually demonstrations. I went to some demonstrations. I think with Libya, it was more, there was a lot of propaganda as well, but it was a little bit sort of kind of viewed as almost not that important. The most important part of that was to sort of like just try to get it out of the papers rather than, put it in front page and justify what was going on. But this is just, in some ways, this is a culmination of more than a century. This is a century and a half, two centuries of sort of Russophobia and geopolitical competition between Britain, the U.S., with Canada backing Britain historically to the U.S., against Russia. So it taps into this whole hostility towards Russia. And then, I do also think Russia is doing, a bad thing in Ukraine, right? I think there's a legitimate, very legitimate criticism of Russia's doing. It's just to see that the progressive forces just don't recognize the deep complicity of Canada in the whole situation.
You and I, we've talked about this before, and I disagree with that position, but it's bad things are happening for sure. But the 8 years of killing civilians in the Donbass did a lot to convince me that only a military response to Ukraine would stop that happening. And it actually hasn't even stopped all of it happening. But so much for progressives and progressivism. I can flush that merrily down the toilet along with the Green Party of Canada's constitution. You just tuned in again. This is Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve is an independent Montreal-based journalist. He's an author. He's an activist. He's written a dozen books on Canadian foreign policy. And we're talking today about the Green Party of Canada and more generally about Canada and the Canadian political milieu being under the thrall of what Eve describes in his article as a war fever psychosis. What I was saying before we were rudely interrupted, Eve, is that the Green Party now, not only can we safely flush their constitution down the toilet, but they are constituted themselves of a co-leadership, quite unique, of Elizabeth, I will never be the leader again, May, and Jonathan Pedneau. Jonathan cuts a rather Obama-Barackian, if I can say that, presence. You had the chance to meet him in person and to ask him his position on these very questions. Do you want to describe that interaction?
Yeah, it was actually, I've done many questioning of politicians in the past bit, and this was one of the more startling experiences. Whereas I went to the launch of his by-election for NDG Westmount seat, and as I approached the office, he was standing outside, and he was talking to somebody, and I waited on him to finish his conversation, and then I introduced myself, And just as I introduced myself, someone else kind of came over to sort of say bye, and he turned away for like a second or two. And then he just basically said, I know who you are, and I'm not interested in anything to do with you. I don't know the exact words he used, but it's on the video clip. And then he's just sort of walking inside to the office. And I went to ask him if the Greens support sending weapons to fight Russia. And I was going to bring up the fact that they have a pacifist constitution. The Amita Kuttner, the previous leader, the interim leader, put out a couple statements right at the beginning of just before Russia's invasion and just after that were critical of sending weapons, which seems to be in line with the party's constitution. And then when Pedno and Elizabeth May became the co-leaders 6 months ago or so, they shifted that policy towards being, to be more sort of, there's a degree of ambiguity in their statements, but in their public statements, they basically say, we support Canada's policy. And of course, Canada's policy has been to send tanks and missiles and, $2 billion in weapons. So they don't come out right and say, hey, we support, send more Canadian tanks. They haven't quite said that, but they say we support Canadian policy, which has been to do that. So I was going to, question him on that. Now, I went there with the expectation, actually, of maybe having a sort of a little bit more of a high-level conversation on these issues, because he had just been to Ukraine, and he was there. He said in some interviews I saw him saying he was there kind of right after Russia invaded. So he's sort of like, engaged on the issue. But he basically just said, I won't talk to you. I just won't answer anything that you have to say because it's you. That was what his position was. And I put a clip on Twitter and people can check that out. And it was pretty stark. And then after, I show that on the clip on Twitter, but it was, I have a longer, sort of back and forth. And then he basically just goes in this whole rant about how I'm a Russian propagandist. I'm an activist for the Russian government. This really aggressive, like just over the top kind of questions, really trying to like belittle me. Just a really stunning reaction. It really wasn't what I expected. I expected, if anything, I was kind of like wanted to prepare myself a bit more to think, through about what I was going to say, because I was expecting somebody, unlike a lot of the other politicians, I was expecting somebody who actually sort of, had a grasp of the issues, and that, be more like it's going to be, you want to make sure to be on top of your facts or your questions rather than because he's going to know his bit. I don't know like where does this come from. I don't know like what he exactly what his deal is, because I've never met him personally. I think it comes from my senses. It comes from this really kind of, in my opinion, absurd effort to be, I don't know, you call it like credible politicians. And I think that all of this comes from this, right? What a credible politician does is just says whatever the Globe and Mail and NATO are saying. What a credible politician does is, in the by-election, he was focusing on language rights, because it's a predominantly Anglophone riding, and his recent bills in the House of Commons that were opposed by Anglophones in Montreal. To me, that's just the absolute kind of worst of politics, right? Like, stick to like principle issues. Talk about, we're in a climate crisis. The Green Party should be talking about a climate crisis, and we need, radical economic and social transformation to get out of that. I obviously think they should, speak principally about peace issues and stuff like that as well. But even if you want to stick to some issues that are sort of closer to home, be bold in your messaging and don't worry about, he's not going to get elected. No one thought he was going to have a chance of winning this by-election. It's just total, it's electoralism of the worst sort, with no chance of even winning the seat. So I don't get it as a moral or even quite frankly as a political strategy. But that's seems to be what he's pursuing, and I think that the NATO proxy war element to it is just one element, and a particularly egregious one, but one element in overall kind of politics.
Well, he looks well groomed and ambitious, so I would just assume that his position, his political position, is one of extreme expediency. That's as is his co-leader, Elizabeth May. She has always been that way, as far as I can see. So much for the Green Party of Canada's pacifism. But what about objecting to the war in the sense on the environmental basis? I mean, the warfare is a pretty environmentally destructive thing. The people making the most money out of it are some of the worst polluters in the world. The American military pollutes more than, I think, all but half a dozen of the biggest countries in the world just on its own. But also the United Kingdom recently sent depleted uranium weapons, and they made no secret of it, into the war theater. It was promptly blown up, or at least parts of it were, in a great environmental disaster that the winds were predominantly going into Western Europe at the time. But now the Americans are saying that they are or have already done the same. And do the Green Party of Canada have anything to say about depleted uranium littering Western Europe and Ukraine?
I haven't seen any statement, just like I didn't see anything saying that that U.S. Almost certainly blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, and it was tons of methane that was released and huge ecological damage. I haven't really seen the kind of environmental world raise that. Everything's maybe too strong a word, but it's been their outlook has been very much subsumed under NATO's perspective. I mean, really, it's from challenging Canadian militarism. I mean, I'm not seeing basically any comments about the F-35 purchase, about the massive naval, $100 billion upfront, 300 and some odd billion over life cycle, a combat vessel purchase. While the forest fires are raging everywhere across the country, security is defined as fighting the Russian military over some territory in eastern Ukraine that is predominantly Russian speaking. I mean,
does in Quebec, does it not resonate with the Quebecers that the eastern part of the country, they could draw a parallel to themselves and their relationship with Canada?
It doesn't. No, kind of stunningly, it doesn't. I mean, but it's not even just that. You know, like if you look at what the Minsk peace accord was really in large part about, was about, you know, decentralizing the Ukrainian state. So part of it about giving, you know, regional rights to the eastern part of the country in this wildly centralized state. I mean, we wouldn't but the Canadian government worked to sabotage that. And I've never seen a sovereigntist Quebec sovereigntist nationalist kind of movement ever raise that lens of criticizing it. All the, you know, shutting down of all kinds of media and the forcing of publishing editions in Ukrainian, right? So if you had a Russian paper, you also have to publish in Ukrainian, which would have, if you did that in Quebec and you forced Le Devoir to also publish an English edition, you would put it out of business, of course.
That there's almost no and you know, Quebec Solidaire, the leftist sovereigntist party here in Quebec, I actually
I at a Ukraine rally on the 1 year anniversary, I questioned the one of their spokespeople, their the MNAs, the members of the National Assembly, Vincent Marissal. And he was speaking this real like gung ho, like we're gonna fight till the last Ukrainian kind of speech. And then I talked to him afterwards, and like he didn't seem to even be like aware of what Minsk II, like the peace accord. he was like, it was actually, this was kind of in contrast to Pedno, whereas I was assuming like Pedno would be kind of knowledgeable, whereas some of these other politicians, they just like they they don't know the basics of things. And he actually, Marissal, the Quebec Solidaire MNA, he had introduced a motion that was, I think, passed by unanimously in the Quebec legislature. It's pretty remarkable, honestly. It's to see how just sort of one-sided, you know, and it's the same thing goes, I talked about this in the left-right book I did about unions. I looked at this around the Odessa massacre, right? You know, more than 40 people are killed at a trade union hall. You would think that some Canadian unions would have like put out a minimum, like a little statement saying there should be a full investigation of what happened at the, you know, in this massacre at the trade union hall. It was like burned, and you know, far right forces, you know, killed more than 40 people. I didn't find a single Canadian union that put out a statement. So this didn't just begin in 2022. This goes back to 2014, and it's like anything that's viewed as like pro-Russia is just just dismissed. It's just, if it's a bad thing that happens to the pro-Russians, it's just ignored. It just didn't happen, and you know, just excluded from the media, and so then the Canadian unions also ignore it. But it's all throughout what would traditionally be considered the sort of left of the political spectrum, be that the Green Party, be that the NDP, be that labor unions, be that environmental groups. Early on in Russia's invasion, a whole bunch of the environmental groups. The prominent guy from 350.org, I'm forgetting his name right now, Bill McKibben. They were all like, you know, sort of, this is why we have to get off of fossil fuels, because the Putin dictator he's being financed by fossil fuels. They really just like fed the kind of really simplistic kind of NATO perspective to sort of try to advance their you know, green aims. But it was so obvious that this would just be actually destructive. This, you know, undermine social movements. Militarism is you know, it's good for the right. It's not good for progressive movements.
We've buried progressivism now already. We did that earlier in the conversation, and we've buried pacifism, and we can bury anarchism too, because the cancel culture, you write, overtook anarchism, and the venue canceled. What was it here? Ukraine supporters attack free speech in the name of democracy is your article. And you talk about the Toronto Public Library canceling the anarchist book fair event and them going along with it. You mentioned earlier, and I'm speaking quickly because we're running out of time, Eve, but you mentioned earlier Dmitry Lascaris, and he's on the Making Peace with Russia One Handshake at a Time tour. This whole idea of shutting down any kind of expressions of anti-war sentiment or peace sentiment more properly. Tamara Lorentz was on the show last week in the Vienna Peace Summit, the Union Hall there. They canceled out at the last minute the Peace Summit event as well, you know, talking about what happened in Odessa. But now, with only 48 hours notice, they are releasing the locations of his talking tour, because they're being harassed by the UCC and others, I suppose. The event here in Victoria, well, I was just talking to Ken Stone earlier this morning about the event in Hamilton, and a gaggle of opponents tried to charge the event. But also here in Victoria, the Eventbrite, that's where you organize your registration to go to the meeting, has been also toyed with so that it reads the events are all sold out. So, I mean, what about this in our final minutes, Eve, the idea of actually even marginal voices like mine and yours to a lesser degree, can even our way in, never mind the CBC or the corporate media.
No, the Ukrainian Canadian Congress has an explicit policy. They've been lobbying the government to shut down these events, and they're saying it's hate speech against Ukrainians. They tried it at a bunch of university campuses. They did that. The two community centers have canceled room bookings here in Montreal for two different events that myself, the University of Montreal prof, and the leader of the Green Party of Quebec were supposed to speak at. And then when the one that happened, which was just by chance happened during the Anarchist Book Fair, that the community center hosts the Anarchist Book Fair in Montreal, but won't host this talk about Ukraine. And then there was like 30 people that showed up and just yelled the whole hour. We held it outside, and they just yelled the whole time. So this is supposed to be all about us fighting for democracy in Ukraine, but the forces that want Canada to contribute more to this supposed fight for democracy in Ukraine are more than comfortable with very democratically questionable tactics. And what's crazy about this is that we're talking about like completely marginalized positions. We're talking about positions that no major media is willing to touch. No significant institution in the country is willing to articulate, and they feel threatened by, you know, 30 people getting together to hear, you know, Dmitry speak about his trip to Russia and his perspective on this war. It's remarkable. The climate of repression, ideological repression, is pretty stunning. And fortunately, there is some polling that shows that the public is much more ambivalent about weapons deliveries and stuff like that. But no doubt in the intellectual climate and the open willingness to try to just shut down the peace movement is pretty troubling.
Well, I think we're going to have to redefine what intellectual climate means as well, then, in this country, as everything else is residing in the bottom of the porcelain bowl right now. And I expect if what Canada and Canadians' position on this is described as intellectual, it can join the rest. It's always a joy to speak with you, Eve. And again, you can go to Eve's website at properly, eveangler.com. We've been talking a little bit around his article, Canadian Progressives, with scare quotes, suffer bad case of war fever psychosis. You can find the article there. It's full of more stuff that you will probably, if you're conscious at all, will find troubling, as I do. Thanks a lot, Eve, for coming on. And oh yes, again, to go to the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca to see more about Dmitry's tour schedule, Making Peace with Russia, One Handshake at a Time. It's going right across the country from Halifax to Victoria. I'm not sure. I had to phone organizers that I happen to know to get my position, because the Eventbrite thing was useless to me because it's been overloaded, and I hear people are getting their computers hacked as well. So definitely no resistance will be brooked, it seems, but I think we'll resist anyway. Thanks again, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
All right, till the next time.
We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war, it is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war, it is a time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves, because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary.
Say, what you gonna do?
We hounded the Ayatollah religiously. Bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's son hideously.
Knowing all you know.
We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians. Watched Gorbachev slaughtering Lithuanians. We better warn the Amish, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians. military, and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are